Hello, listeners.
Hey.
Hey, everybody. Hey.
Happy
hey,
Christmas.
Hey, Mike.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
It's great that we're all here together again, you know, in the pub, enjoying a nice festive glass of ale, in the White Hart in Calm. Ideally situated for visitors to Avebury, Stonehenge, the beautiful Wiltshire countryside.
And there's a log fire as well.
There's a fire.
Always good to see.
High-backed leather armchairs. Pints. It comes in pints. Which is great. Yeah. So welcome. Join us around the roaring log fire for the Linux Voice podcast, Season 1, Episode 3. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Ben Everard.
Cheers, Mike.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Glug, glug, glug.
There's a knock at the door.
Hang on a minute.
A strange figure is coming in.
What? Who's that?
Hello.
Hang on a minute.
I recognise you three.
It's Graham.
It is.
You're alive.
Hello.
Graham.
Hello.
Graham.
I am.
What have you been doing?
I've been travelling the world, following in Ben's footsteps. I cycled across the Sudan. I diffused mines in the Sahara Desert. All these things, wonderful things.
Wow.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Would you like to join us in a podcast?
Ah, the podcast. I'd love to. Thank you very much.
We'll crack on with Season 1, Episode 3 of Linux Voice. We've got news. We've got things that we've discovered and things that we've found in a week, in a fortnight.
Mm-hmm.
We've got halfway reminder. We've got vocalise your neurons.
No, we don't. Nobody wanted their neurons to be vocalised, sadly.
And we've got voice of the masses and that other thing that I can't remember.
That was it, I think.
That was it.
No, challenge.
The challenge.
Of course.
The results of the challenge report and the next challenge.
Aha. Uh-huh.
This is a smorgasbord, a winter Yule feast. Brought to you in partnership with the White Hart Inn in Calm.
Cheers.
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 Cheers, Graham.
Cheers, Graham.
Welcome back.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
So, now I've finished drinking my pint, that brings us on to the news. This fortnight, we've got Fedora 20. Is it 20 already?
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It seems like only yesterday it was Fedora Core.
Yeah.
It does, actually. It does. I can remember that. And before that, Red Hat. You know.
Yeah.
What is this new upstart? It's 10 years since the beginning of Fedora.
That would make sense. 2003, yeah. It's probably not far from 20 years of Red Hat, actually.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Red Hat was in 1994 or something. Yeah, one of the big features in this release is that the ARM architecture is now a primary architecture, so...
Yeah, it's ARM v7, so Raspberry Pi fans, this isn't for you. Although there is still PiDora.
There is PiDora, yeah.
Yeah.
For the Raspberry Pi-minded Fedora user.
But this is for the newer, funkier ARM chips.
But it's interesting to see that, because this isn't so much about... We know that ARM chips are being used everywhere. They practically dominate mobile devices outside laptops.
Yeah.
But ARM chips are being used more and more in enterprises, in servers.
Well, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, with Fedora being this test bed for Red Hat.
Yeah.
I assume, you know, that means that Red Hat is looking at kind of enterprise support for ARM-based systems.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
One of those things with 100 CPUs in it.
Yeah, I mean, the ARM servers are still pretty new. There's not too many of them about.
But obviously, it's a big growing market, isn't it?
It's a growing
Didn't
market.
You look at one at the old magazine?
Yeah, I did. I went down to somewhere, I forget, Tunbridge Wells, perhaps? I completely forgot. And no, it wasn't there. but yeah, I had a play
You're not allowed to say.
I had a play with one here at Boston. And they're interesting jobbies. It's like... It's kind of like getting a whole cluster in a box, these ARM services. They're independent systems. It's not like a multi-core 86 CPU.
Okay.
It's like having 50 computers in your box that you can cluster and run all your Hadoop or all your whatever you want in it. And it's an interesting idea, though. I think it'll take a while to catch on.
But we've sort of seen this before. You know, we always... Historically, servers have been like the ultra-powerful boxes. But remember when the Mac Mini came out, one surprising use for it was that people were using Mac Minis as servers. There was like Mac Mini co-location and stuff like that because people wanted quiet, cool, low-power boxes. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that you had to write kind of the application specifically to take advantage of this architecture?
Well, you don't necessarily, depends what you want to do with it, but yeah, it has to be.
Could you run Apache, for example, and it automatically manage the website load across all those things?
We could run Apache on one of the nodes, and then Apache obviously has various load balancing in it that you'd have to do. To manage, you'd essentially have a dozen instances of Apache on a dozen separate computers. Just all those computers would be in one box. They're after us. Run!
You just found out where I am.
Run for it, buddy. They found me.
So yeah, I mean that's the sort of thing you talk about. I mean, obviously, don't forget that Chromebooks are now one of the biggest selling laptops.
Mm. And they're ARM, are they? No, well, some of them
not
are.
All right.
I've been meaning to pick one up actually. I think that'd be great for doing work.
So yeah, and especially with the future of ARM64, it's potentially becoming a more powerful architecture that you can do real work on. So yeah, and there's also a lot of other stuff in Fedora 20 as well. There's Hadoop in there and loads of other jazz, as well as just all the normal bug fixes and updates.
Well, my Nintendo 3DS XL is powered by an ARM chip, and I do lots of real work in Animal Crossing there, like pulling up weeds and catching fish.
Do you know whether they've fixed the awful installer?
I haven't tried to install it. It got a little bit better in the last release, so I assume it's bit better this release.
There was a fix in 19, a slight fix in 19, but 18 was a real nadir for usability and sense and logic.
Next on the super fast Lightning news, there is SteamOS. SteamOS, a whole new distribution for gaming.
SteamOS.
Wow. SteamOS, SteamOS. MyCOS, MicOS.
StayArmOS.
StayArmOS, yeah.
I think yeah. I'd say SteamOS.
Yeah.
SteamOS.
Has anybody here tried it?
I haven't.
I know.
I have actually tried it.
Oh, wow, cool.
But to keep news snappy, I was going to talk about it later in the podcast.
Awesome.
Great.
But snappy news.
But this is you know, the news of this year, and we're going to talk about that later, but Valve, Steam, Linux is just filled with games. All kinds of win.
Football Manager is a great win.
Yeah, it is. And it's just remarkable that a company like Valve is doing this. And it's great. It's great to see it happening, really happening.
Yeah, awesome. So Lightning on. OwnCloud 6, we've talked about it before in the podcast, but they've come out, it's finally released, including all sorts of awesome stuff, but the big one is document editing, collaborative document editing in the cloud. We'll talk about it in a minute, but the thing I really like about it is the fact that it's not ingrained into OwnCloud. It's written as a separate JavaScript library, really, so you can easily throw it into other applications.
Yeah, and it's based on Open Document as well, so the documents that you create and edit in OwnCloud, you can easily get them out and put them into a FAT client desktop application, like LibreOffice.
They brought it into OwnCloud, didn't they? It was a separate project. It had been developed independently.
Yeah, it's developed by a German company that does a lot of stuff with the ODF in general, and its name I've forgotten.
It's probably like Allgemeine Sozialkarten, something like that.
It's a killer feature, OwnCloud. Yeah. It's just wonderful. Since using it, you know, I've dumped so many other services, Dropbox. I haven't quite dumped Google Docs, but you know, it's great to have the facility.
I played around with it briefly, but I haven't seen yet any sort of chat facility in the collaboration.
No, there isn't.
That seems to be something that seems to be quite a large missing feature. Now, if you and I are editing a document together,
I
don't know why we'd have a reason to do that, but if we were, then I'd want to be able to talk to you at the same time. Now, I know I could use another messaging service, but it's nice to be able to leave comments and say, well, oh, I've just changed this paragraph.
Yeah.
I mean, it's release one. I'm sure that's stuff that will come in the future. Mm.
Absolutely. But I really, really like OwnCloud. In fact, I like it so much, I think I'm going to write a tutorial about it for Linux Voice issue 1. If anybody's
got
any
interest. It has all that. It has versioning for free, doesn't it? The shared folders and the security is really good.
Yeah.
And the fact is, I've still got Beta 2 installed. I didn't realise things were going to move so quickly towards a final release. So they've obviously had very few problems with it.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Yeah, and there's also the music streaming and video playing and loads of lovely jazz in there.
I suppose that ties in, quickly mention the fact that Google's takeout now includes the ability to download your Gmail as an mbox.
As an mbox file?
Yeah, really. Before you had to use IMAP or POP and download all your mail from Gmail that way and kind of do it the manual way, but now they've made it much easier if you want to migrate or back up all of your email without, you know, being beholden, to use Andrew's words, to Google.
So a single mbox file for different labels?
Well, I guess an mbox includes a load of files, doesn't it? inside the inbox file? Isn't it all the mails are separate?
Well, no, that's mail DIR, isn't it? An mbox file is just a single file with all your mails in.
That's what it
like
is.
Like a giant mbox text file, right. But you could end up with like an 8 gigabyte text file.
Yeah, it will be, yeah.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Korea, South Korea, maybe pushing a switch to Ubuntu after the end of life of Windows XP.
So they're going to get rid of Red Flag Linux and move to Ubuntu?
Wrong Korea. South Korea.
North Korea is best Korea.
Oh, I see. The Democratic People's whatever of Korea. Yeah.
For the glorious struggle revolution.
Make benefit great nation of North Korea.
Yeah. Then to support
KDE.
Kim Song... Kim Il-sungism. Oh, I
sensible
can't pronounce
people
it.
In South Korea using Ubuntu.
We should point out this is it seems to be based on wild rumours.
Yeah, at the moment, but
it does. I mean,
propaganda, you mean?
Couldn't possibly say. So obviously XP comes end of life in April next year. The options are basically upgrade or sit there with a buggy security hold OS.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times companies and governments say, oh, we're thinking about switching to Linux, and then they suddenly get big discounts from companies like Microsoft. So, you know, we don't know, like you say, it's all based on rumors at the moment. But I think it's interesting that they are obviously in a bit of a fix. They've got to move to something, whether it's Windows 7 or Windows 8, God forbid.
I mean, at this point, they need to do something quickly, and there's two ways of looking at it. Rolling to Ubuntu means you can keep the same hardware, which is obviously a huge win for cost and everything else.
Well, can they keep the same hardware? I mean, Ubuntu's requirements are still quite a bit more than old XP, isn't it? So,
I don't know. I run Ubuntu on an XP laptop.
If you're running XP, you're also running Norton and stupid antivirus.
Well, that's true, yeah. Oh, but, yeah.
Running all those Trojan programs that you've installed on all those things via your massive network of bots.
Oh, don't talk about my botnet here in public, please.
We all know what macOS really does.
Ubuntu on an XP machine is probably going to run faster than XP on the same machine. So if their current machines are fast enough, they're not going to get any slower by putting Ubuntu on there.
I guess it could be, yeah. I'm thinking like XP's base requirements when it came out, something like 128 megs of RAM, but you'd have a Lubuntu maybe, or even.
Well, they're following in the footsteps of Munich, aren't they?
Yes.
With Munich's...
Der Bayerischen Hauptstadt? Der Bayerischen Hauptstadt. Good.
Sorry, Mike, that's just noise.
Ah, okay.
Moving on.
Hang on, what's the next news story about?
The next news story is Munich have their transition again. They seem to announce this news story.
Oh, you guys are good.
They seem to announce this every month. Finished our transition. Next month. We finished
it
really
well. That's just Slashdot. Yeah. The editor just Slashdot. I don't realise they've already done it.
Dupe. Yeah, that's 15,000 computers are now running Linux. I saw an interesting comment about this recently. For us, this is all like, woohoo, success.
Yeah.
Linux, you can switch completely away from Microsoft. But someone said, well, yeah, but how would other companies and governments and local governments feel about it? It says it takes 10 years to switch to Linux and you have to make your own distro. So, you know.
Yeah, true.
From that perspective.
No, it takes the first local government with a population of whatever.
1.5 million in Munich.
Okay,
so
the first organisation that does it takes 10 years. The second organisation that does it will not take 10 years.
That's true, and they won't necessarily need to make their own distro either.
Of course not.
And to be honest, that bigger migration would have taken a long time on Windows. I mean, I worked on a Windows XP to Vista, I think, upgrade. It might even be 98 to Vista, and that took probably 5 years. In fact, Vista was outdated by the time we'd switched to it.
Cool, huge win. When the government of Baden-Württemberg decides to switch, then obviously they'll have to reinvent everything.
Or Stuttgart or whatever.
Intense local rivalry with the blue and white weirdos over the border.
Oh, that's not... Yeah, the only real part of Germany is Bayern, isn't it? I shouldn't say that, actually. But anyway, I have tried to speak to them, and I actually went to their offices. If anybody from Linux is listening, your offices are in Sonnenstrasse next to the Goethe
Institute.
I'm sure they
know. Yeah.
No, I'm asking.
This is Mike's way of saying, I know where you live.
The Mycos botnet is tracking them.
Oh, yeah. Can I tell you, I work for the NSA, by the way. Oh, shouldn't say that anymore.
If you did, you wouldn't say that.
But we've also got to bear in mind that it took them 10 years, but that is these people live in a city with amazing beer halls, so that's going to slow everything down because you spend every evening just drinking beer.
So yes.
That's my excuse.
And that's the news.
Hold on. Surely the fact that you guys made your total is big news.
Oh, yeah. It's fairly big news, I suppose.
I would say then it's massive. I think you've done an amazing job.
Oh, thanks.
I know that happened just a few days after the last podcast, but so it seems like a long time ago now, but for, you know.
For us three hobbits, it's been quite a lot of work.
Yeah.
Although we have had some help from a fourth behind the scenes.
Yes.
Lovely Stacey, our arts person.
Big.
Valued colleague. She makes everything look awesome.
Yep. She did all the lovely work on our cover.
Yeah.
So it feels a little bit weird doing this because I've not done this for 3 months.
Really?
But I think it's now time for Discovery of the Fortnight.
I think it
because
has
that's what
name.
That's what. Oh, you're right. We changed because things have changed.
You're
things
thinking
have changed. It's all new.
Old school.
And I've always had a problem moving on. That's what it is.
It's got a much snappier name now.
What is it called? Things we've discovered in a week.
Now, things we've found in 2 weeks.
Which doesn't leave me any excuse, really, because it's things I've discovered in 3 months.
You must have found all sorts of awesome stuff, right?
Yeah.
Begin.
I, you know the way that this section goes. You have lots and lots of ideas and discoveries over the course of 3 months. Never write them down, and when it comes to the day you're recording the podcast, you can't remember any of them. However, I was going to talk about SteamOS.
Ah, nice one.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was always really excited about SteamOS because despite having a PlayStation in my living room, I really love the flourishing indie game development scene that Linux has become such a big part of. And having a box, I have my old Myth TV box underneath the television, which is a very modest PC. It's like a 2 gigahertz dual core Intel with a passively cooled old Intel and NVIDIA graphics card. So the main struggle you have with SteamOS at the moment is installing it on anything that doesn't have an EFI motherboard.
Right. But it...
Wow, somebody's just brought...
Awesome.
Sausage rolls,
that's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Oh, that smells amazing.
The landlady of the pub has just brought us sausage rolls.
That's the White Hart Inn in Carlisle.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Cool. This is such
what
a
do we
huge
do?
Win.
What do we do?
Excuse us for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, so it seems insane to me that it's got such specific and restrictive requirements that it. But basically, the installation is a version of a cloned partition that CloneZilla reclones back onto the hard drive. So they've set it up to only run on very specific hardware.
There's two installation methods, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's a manual install as well, yeah.
Did your very modest PC have UEFI?
No, it didn't.
I thought it required UEFI.
Yeah, well, I used one of those. On Reddit, they went into lots and lots of details about how to get around it. Basically, I installed it onto a USB thumb drive, manually installed grub on top of that.
UEFI.
Makes me think of an old Mexican art editor.
It wasn't easy or very pleasant. It's certainly not what a Windows gamer is going to be feel happy doing, you know, wanting to experience SteamOS.
They'll buy the hardware, won't they, when it's installed.
And it's also a beta release.
Yeah, that's true.
It is beta, but absolutely zero concessions have been made to let people try it in this way.
So is it based on Debian, as we thought it
was? It is, yes. Yeah, you're right.
For the stability.
So based in Debian. There was another Debian release just this week, wasn't there?
7.3, yeah.
Yeah, which it seems coincidental. It'd be nice to speak to the Debian team to see how closely they've been working with Valve on all of this. I know that I think it uses a few custom modules and a few custom modifications. It's got some real-time modules running to keep things running well. I've not spent that much time with it, but it... Configuration is weird.
How does the interface work from as a sort of living room controller thing?
It's not as nice as XBMC, which I think they've got a really beautiful interface to the front end.
Yeah.
But it's very good. It's got this ambient background. So everything else configured itself correctly. There's an HDMI port on my NVIDIA card. So audio, video, 3D acceleration comes out of that. Once you've run a post-install script, it boots to Steam OS UI automatically. It seems to have its own compositing. It doesn't run a window manager, although GNOME is installed in the background, so you can switch to a desktop user if you need to. The UI itself looks like it's had a lot of development. There are a lot of options. I plugged in a PlayStation 3 controller, a DualShock controller with a USB cable. It automatically recognized it. All of the keys are sensibly set up to work on the buttons. The overlay compositing I found really clever. On the games that supported it, when you're playing a game, you can press the home button on your controller and you actually get the overlay of the Steam user interface back, just like you would on a games console, so you can chat to people and you can check how downloads and installs are doing on other games. The biggest problem is that some games only support mouse and keyboard, some games only half support the gamepad, some games support the gamepad but aren't pre-configured for the gamepad that SteamOS is already using. So you need to have a keyboard. I needed to have a keyboard plugged in at the moment. That's the biggest problem. Plus, many of those indie games use their own screen resolution configuration tools, which look hideous when there's no window manager running. Yeah. And you're running on, as I am doing, on an HDTV. So you get these tiny windows have fonts of, I don't know, 100 point sizes just to be able to select the correct screen resolution. But as a beta release, I mean, you can download in the background, you can install games with a single click, it's quick. You can, the web browser, whatever they've used, is really clever. You can just scroll through it and it keeps focus on whatever you're selecting. It stays in the middle. So you can open up the community pages of the game you're playing while you're playing it using this overlay mode.
Okay.
It feels very much like a games console. I'm really impressed. I really like it.
And it's Linux. Real Linux. Yeah. It's not just like the kernel with a whole bunch of proprietary technology. It's a real Linux distro.
Yeah.
That's great news for Linux fans.
It's just a thought of being able to get a console and straight away I'll have all the games from the humble bundles I've bought for the past couple of years just there. Awesome.
Yeah, and you know, somebody will sell there's nothing stopping somebody selling a cheap SteamOS PC. You know, not talking about one that can play Half-Life 3, but that 2 gig and 2 gigahertz Core 2 Duo CPU with, I think it's got 2 gig of RAM, but it might even be 1. It plays a lot of those old Humble Bundle games and the indie games perfectly well.
Yeah,
you know, which is just what you need
for gamers. That is a pretty old spec machine.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And the graphics card's even worse than that. I can't remember what it is, but it's a passively cooled Nvidia card from about 4 years ago. So it's basically not capable of anything.
Yeah.
And even played Sir, You're Being Hunted in the low detail settings on a 1080p screen. So it looks like the way to play games on Linux, and Valve are obviously hoping is the way to play games on a PC, and it's just brilliant. Yeah, so after a brief sausage interlude, that was my discovery, really. SteamOS is brilliant.
Sausage interlude.
Yeah.
So, which podcast am I in?
What we need is a magazine to be able to publish a tutorial in on how to get SteamOS running.
Total sausage.
So, have you guys discovered anything over the last 2 weeks?
I discovered something about 2 hours ago, actually. Yeah. Do you know why the home directory in Linux and Unix is the squiggly line, the tilde?
I do, actually.
No, yeah. I don't know this.
It's the home button on one of those old terminals, had home written and the tilde.
Right, so what have you discovered, Andrew?
It's the same reason that, what is it, the J, K, L, and M. Because they used to have, they used to have the up, down, left and right arrows on them, on the old, on the old keyboards.
Yeah, those old terminal keyboards were pretty cool because they had all sorts of crazy buttons. I saw one in one of these pictures as I was researching this, and it was like pad out or something like that. And I don't know what it means, but in the top right of this old 1970s terminal keyboard was the home button, and it also produced the squiggly tilde. Yeah, so it's just that association has remained to this day.
It is kind of cool, yeah.
It is kind of cool. To make that character now on a British keyboard, you have to hold down shift, so it's a bit annoying. But somebody should make a sort of Unix keyboard layout that has all these.
Why don't you crowdfund the creation of one?
Yeah, crowdfunding's pretty hot at the moment.
Crowdfunding is excellent at the moment.
Yes.
Sorry, I was still had a mouthful of beer when I said that.
Ah, okay.
I apologise.
That's all right. That's the way to go about things.
Soon to be saturated, I think, the world of crowdfunding, with lots of people who are unhappy with their jobs.
I thought you meant Andrew with beer then. Soon to be saturated.
I'm going to crowdfund beer.
Beer funding.
People who are unpopular with their jobs and want to get out and
find people who, don't say people who are unpopular with their jobs.
Yeah.
God,
you are saturated with beer.
I am. I'm sated. Let's move quickly on.
More discoveries this fortnight. Actually, I just wanted to quickly go through some of the stuff I've discovered this year.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, since the last one of the year.
You make us all look really bad.
I think there's three things that I've really started using quite a lot this year. The Raspberry Pi, obviously it's been around for more than a year.
Is there any reason why you've been using the Raspberry Pi a lot?
I have been working on my own book.
Oh, really? What's it called?
Oh, dear. It's called Learning Python with the Raspberry Pi.
Published by Wiley.
Indeed it is.
Co-authored with Alex Bradbury of the Raspberry Pi Foundation.
Indeed. I sent off the final author reviews of the final manuscripts yesterday.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow.
Cheers, Ben. Cheers.
Good work, Ben. Well done.
I didn't intend that to be a blatant plug, but anyway. I have genuinely said, and you know, I don't know, it's been around for a lot longer than that, but so much stuff you can do with it. It's so cool. I mean, everything from like Arduino-like GPIOing to everything else, to media centres, to games consoles.
You need to have some kind of mastery of Python, I presume, to get the most out of it.
Well, of course. Of course. The second thing I've got well into this year is OwnCloud. I know we've talked about it earlier on. It's awesome. And it's just such a great way to take back control of your data, yet still have all the services that Dropbox and Google and whatnot provide. Well, not all, most of the services, a lot of the services. The third one, CyanogenMod, running open source software on your phones and tablets. It's one of those things, it feels back, using CyanogenMod, it feels like I'm back in the days of early Linux when I was first using it again, when things don't always work perfectly. In fact, they can often be quite awkward, but it's out there.
It's not Windows.
It's on the frontiers of open source.
That's a really good point.
You know?
It does feel like that, you know. Yeah. It does feel like, and you kind of become a slave to Google's way of doing things, and you don't realise. In fact, there's an alternative. It's not quite as professional, but, you know, you feel good for doing it.
Yeah. And, I mean, I was chatting to someone the other day about Google's location history. It's a feature they've put in, and they can show you where they've tracked you.
And is this with Google Maps, or just...
Well, basically, across all their services, and then... And then, through the Android as well. And I didn't have a single entry in it. They hadn't tracked any of my locations since I switched from Chrome to Firefox and from Android to CyanogenMod.
Right, yeah.
And it just shows you how much you're taking back by doing this. Well,
so many things are enabled by default, aren't they? And if you get like an Android phone, I got a Samsung S3 Mini, and I've always been careful. I've not got a big beef with Google, but I've always been careful to disable web history.
Google do many great things.
Yeah, they do.
It's a big, complicated company.
But just, I got this phone, you know, signed into my Google account, and automatically a lot of these things were re-enabled. Everything I did on Maps was being stored. Every search was being stored and like that. And I had to go and again turn them all off because I just don't want all this information being stored and potentially shared with the NSA.
And it's just about, it's the same reason I use Linux. It's about taking back control of my hardware. Mm. It's not about trying to get completely off Google, because I think they do a lot of great stuff. But it's about doing it on my own terms. Just to finish off with one thing I did discover this fortnight, courtesy of the IRC crowd on Linux Voice channel on
Freenode.
I've discovered that back in the day when you had games that came on cassette tapes, same as audio cassettes, you could broadcast them over FM radio, record them onto tapes and play them. I never knew that. I feel like I missed out on a whole world of games by not knowing this back then.
You missed out on a whole world of really rubbish bandwidth. The world has changed. Things are much better now.
But the world is changing.
I can't recall that ever happening in the UK. I was big into the Spectrum back in the late 80s, but I can't recall anybody ever broadcasting games on the radio.
Was it a Soviet bloc sort of thing?
Well, I heard that it happened somewhere in the Netherlands once. So, I mean, I don't know how reliable it was, if 99% of people had problems with it, but... What about you, Graham? You know things that happened in computers in the 80s.
You're old.
Loading cassettes. I can tell you one anecdote where I knew two friends who used to pirate a lot of games. And one of the things they did was just make a splitter cable, you know, because it's all audio, and
in fact, tape-to-tape recording mechanisms were very expensive back in the mid-early 80s, and so you could get your two data recorders together if you had two Commodore 64s, for example, and just wire them together by splitting the cables, and then you'd bring friends back from school and say, with their latest titles, and say, can we see, you know, what Cockatoni Wilf looks like? And they'd load it up on the Commodore 64, little knowing that as they were playing, that it was being recorded by the data cassette under the table. Yeah. Uh-huh. Great thing.
Clandestine.
Happy days.
And look at the games industry now. It's been destroyed, making billions and billions a year. Yeah.
£70 for a downloadable game on the PS4.
When did that
happen? Yeah. Premium subscriptions to get access to the Battlefield maps. You know?
Yeah. Oh. But did you ever hear anything about tapes on the radio? Like C64?
When I first went to university, one of the things that we stupidly tried to do was broadcast data across CB radio and through an analog modulator demodulator.
Okay.
Which kind of worked. So I can see that. I mean, the bandwidth is very, very narrow on those cassette tapes. So I could see it theoretically working.
Yeah.
Do you reckon we could put, like, Fedora 20 on the back end of this podcast?
We should leave, you know... Linux voice radio.
There is actually... this is a discovery as well. There is a... Although I can't remember where it is. There is a website on the internet somewhere with a synthesized...
That's not a discovery.
Oh, it is. There's a synthesized speech program speaking out the Linux kernel source code. Have you seen this, Ben?
Yeah.
It's just some guy speaking like this, like slash star.
Silly robot voice.
Copyright Linus Torvalds. But apparently, if you listen to it long enough, this artificial voice reads out the entire... Linux kernel source code. So it must go on for months and months, years and years. But,
Do you reckon it's like painting the fourth bridge? It's like they never finish before the next one comes out and they have to start again.
Probably, yeah. It's probably a test to just see if anybody actually... It's like Satie's Vexations. Does anybody actually want to listen to it all the way through? Yeah.
Awesome.
Is that it?
Is that it? Did you have a discovery?
Andrew hasn't discovered anything.
Me, I have discoveries.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I have awesome discoveries.
Take it easy.
I have awesome discoveries. Sorry, I should dig out my thesaurus and unawesomeify my vocabulary.
Use the word ace, that's good.
Yes, use the word bomba cabeza.
Bomba, two words.
Bomba cabeza. I'd fail. If I try and dwell beyond the boundaries of awesome, if I try and leave the Shire... My linguistic vocabulary shire, I fail. So, discoveries then. Three discoveries. One Linuxy, one non-Linuxy, one very Linuxy. So, first one, I've upgraded from my ancient Steam-driven Nokia and have...
Steam.
Steam
requires the very latest hardware.
This is the Brunel kind of Steam, the top-hatted, gold-top cane, befrock-coated capitalist.
It's downhill all the way from Swindon.
Yes, so I've got a Nexus 5 now, which means that Google, not only do they know everything that I'm searching for, they also know where I am and who I'm talking to, which feels kind of weird, but, you know, it's convenient, and so I fall into the spider's web, into Shelob's lair. And so
this is funny. Andrew's had the Nexus 5 for about 4 days, I believe, and he's yet to put his SIM in it.
Yeah.
Because it's just too weird.
And it still says Nexus 5 on every screen you visit, because the supplied plastic peel-off screen thing is still on it.
Can you use it without the simming? Can you like browse the web and
it's actually working fine? Yeah.
So it's just a tablet.
It's just a tablet. Yeah,
it's an Nexus 5.
It's a really small, very expensive tablet.
Okay.
And I know Gokwan says not to save anything for best, but I want to keep it nice, keep it nice and shiny, so keep the plastic things on. And also, I find it a bit weird, like pressing buttons, but there aren't any buttons on it. It's just a touchscreen. I don't really like it. I mean, I love it. I'm embracing the new technical digital future.
You could have bought a Nokia with all its big chunky plastic buttons and Windows Phone.
Or the rumoured Nokia Android phone.
Yeah, that's true. That's
would have an awesome camera on it.
Yeah.
Or formerly of Nokia Sailfish phone.
Oh, yes, that should have been news, shouldn't it?
Oh, dope.
Wasn't that news last time?
Oh, yeah, the Holler. Oh, yeah, you guys covered it last time.
Hoya.
Hoya. Hoya.
Jala.
Yawl. not yacht, yawl, a little tiny sailing thing. As we were informed on linuxvoice.com, home of the most erudite, well-informed and un-awesomified, ossified vocabulary on the internet. Not like Slashdot, which is full of internet idiots.
It's the XOR of Slashdot.
It is. It's the anti-Slashdot.
Bizarro Slashdot.
XOR Slashdot, you get Linux Voice.
So that's a good strap line for the magazine.
Internet XOR Slashdot.
So I've got this phone. I don't intend to keep it Android. What I really want is for Ubuntu to get their Ubuntu Touch phone operating system.
Oh, that was news.
On the Nexus 5, was it?
They've
signed up
a mobile partner.
They have. They have, haven't they? Yeah.
It's the thing in France. Secret. Yes, so I've got this phone. I really want to put Ubuntu Touch on it as soon as it's ready, because I've had a play with Android. I'm not all that convinced by it. But I have seen Ubuntu Touch in action and I really like it. So as soon as the things are ready for me to download and stuff, then I'll put it on there.
I think you don't want to put Nexus 5 now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, I might do that after I've put the SIM card in.
Do you not want to put the Herd on your phone, actually? as an experienced Herd user, an advocate.
Yeah, then I can do LS on my phone. Yeah. That would be amazing.
What's the ETA for Mycos on phones?
Well, my team's working on it at the moment, yeah, but they're busy doing other things as well. So,
discovery number two is I went to pick young Mike Saunders up from the airport the other day when coming over from foreign back to England, back to this womb of kings, and we took the pretty way back.
Mm.
You get off airport M40 and then you get on the Roman Road, which takes you all the way to Chippenham. In fact, it carries on. It's the Roman Road that runs from Lincoln to Exeter, past Nick Veitch's house, the old editor of Linux Format, who was endorsed us on the Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah, he loved it.
But it's just, I mean, how amazing is this? I mean, I spoke about Simon Sharma reading, and he had a history of the Jews on the BBC recently, which may still be on iPlayer, I'm not sure. But he was reading out this old, broken fragment of some ancient scroll in his half-forgotten schoolboy Hebrew. And the sense of continuity there is absolutely fascinating. This cultural thread that spans the generations, the millennia. And, you know, it's not quite as cool as that.
It
is pretty cool. Mike and I drove back from the airport on a Roman road that was built after the Romans invaded in 54 or whatever it was.
It was a really cool idea of you to do just that.
Utterly fantastic.
The problem is I just can't remember much of it since we almost got killed when somebody pulled out into the middle of the road in a massive fog patch.
Yeah, the almost death was pretty uncool. But yeah, it was near.
That must have been Saruman.
It was near Turkdeen, where there is a long barrow, a Neolithic burial tomb, and Turkdeen Long Barrow is mentioned in one of the very first scenes in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Yeah. He's, you know, in his, when he's not defeating Nazis, his day job is as an archaeology professor.
Yeah.
And when Denholm Elliott comes in and gives him his mission and whatever, and there's the girl with something written on her eyelids, he's performing, Harrison Ford is giving a lecture about Turkdeen.
Which is the discovery, Andrew.
Which we drove past yesterday. Discovery number three is very Linux. The discovery here is that Canonical has never had a magazine advert before. I know this because I'm in contact with some people at Canonical, because, you know, I'm the editorial director of a magazine about Linux.
Ad salesperson.
And ad salesperson and chief Twitter strategist.
Wow.
And boy who makes the tea.
Mm.
But this all changed 2 days ago, when Canonical bought an ad in Linux Voice. And that's great. And at this stage, it's not about the money anymore, because we've passed our funding threshold. It's going ahead. You know, we're having a great time, and we've done the flat plan for the first issue, and it's looking amazing. And hopefully, as time goes on, we'll release more information about what we're doing. But this, I see this really as something that Canonical hasn't done before. And they're doing it not to increase their profile, because they've been this year with the Ubuntu Edge campaign. They're in the Sun, for God's sake. They're in the Guardian. They were all over the place. They were on the BBC's website. They had acres of free publicity given to them by their crowdfunding campaign. And this is just, I think this is their way of sort of I don't know, some sort of seal of approval. You know, they're putting a lot of faith in us.
Somebody thinks it's cool.
Yeah.
And there's still a company that has the ability to, we think it's cool, we'll back it.
Yeah. And that's just, that feels great.
Yeah. We'll have to see what the advert is first.
Of course, the advert could be a Mike Saunders dartboard.
Yeah.
Shrugged to half page size. Such a thing. So yeah, there's a warm glow and a look back at a film from 1981, I believe, the year that Dare came out, the Human League's fantastic album, and also some stuff about Android, which I can't wait to replace. I might actually replace it with CyanogenMod.
CyanogenMod is awesome. It's Google Android without the Google.
In that case, that's win. Okay, CyanogenMod first, then Ubuntu Touch, then probably CyanogenMod again.
Yeah.
Then I'll probably get bored with CyanogenMod and go back to Ubuntu.
Why not?
Because we can, because it's free software.
Exactly.
Carry on.
Excellent. They were awesome discoveries. Thanks, guys. It's good to be back.
That cavalcade of discoveries, that cavalcade of things that we found in 2 weeks, brings us hurtling like a droplet of Sandra Bullock's tears.
You've got a lot better at this while I've been away.
We were always this good. You've just forgotten how good we were.
Circling the earth. I've been too busy listening to Linux Outlaws.
A squillion miles an hour. Anyway, that brings us to the... What does it bring us to, Mike?
It brings us to the halfway slash
the halfway reminder. Halfway reminder. Still to come. There's the results of our challenge report and a challenge for the next podcast. And we have the fantastic speak your, vocalise your... No, we have
voice of the masses.
Voice of the masses.
So, challenge. Bob Moss, good old mob boss, Bobby J. Moss, our old friend from...
Bob, who bought a MacBook Air this week. So,
did he?
Yeah, so don't say too much, yeah.
But has he installed Arch or Gentoo or heard on it?
He said he'll think about installing Linux at a later point, so...
Bob, who works for BT and is therefore doing a very good job in difficult circumstances, isn't that right, Bob?
That's something interesting. I didn't realise that Bruce Schneier, awesome security expert, was paid... Part of his salary came from BT.
Is Bob Moss Bruce Schneier's old boss?
Who knows?
But Bob Moss, alter ego. Bob Moss and Bob. Bob
I've
Moss
never
Bob.
Seen Bruce Schneier and Bob Moss in the same place at the same time.
Neither have I.
That proves it.
That explains why Bruce Schneier has got such a brilliant beard and Bob Moss has got no beard. Because they want to create
a different persona.
Yeah. So hopefully Bob's still at BT if he wants to be. But Bruce Schneier is no longer at BT.
So... Yeah, so Bruce Schneier challenged us. or his alter ego challenged us to run Linux Mint Debian edition. Now, we all know Mint. It's Ubuntu goodness with different interfaces and a different focus and lots of extra stuff rolled in, like codecs and stuff. Now, Linux Mint Debian edition, as the name suggests, is based on Debian. It's based on Debian's testing branch. So, yeah, how did you find it, guys?
Well, I used Debian Mint Edition 13, I think it was. And you expect all sorts of things from Debian, and you expect things from Mint as well. Mint, you want easy codecs, you want desktop class. From Debian, you want stability in a huge range of packages. And that's exactly what it was. It was Debian, but cleaned up, given a nice GNOME 2.x style interface, which is Mate, their fork.
You got the Mate version, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that was the default desktop for the Debian edition. Mm. They reserved Cinnamon for the Ubuntu-based one. And it's just marvellous. It works really, really well. I'd expected there to be a little bit of an issue with free, non-free codecs because it's Debian.
Yeah.
But one of the great things about Mint is that they make it easy for you to install stuff if you want it. They give you the choice. And so I exercised the choice and was quickly watching YouTube videos of Mexican boxing.
Hang on. Why are you doing that?
I reveal my secret disguise.
Ciao.
Hola.
Hola, donde estas los hot pigs?
Meno, Nemo, Estar, Effie.
It's just like he's here.
Yes. So I heartily approve of Mint Debian Edition. I think it's brilliant. If you know, Mint's great. I'm running Mint 15 at the moment, but I have found Cinnamon to be just ever so slightly crashy. And if you find it's just a wee bit too bleeding edge for you, then give the Debian Edition a spin, because it's really fantastic.
You don't want your desktop or window manager crashing, do you? Go on, Ben.
I mean, the one thing I've been banging on about with Mint for a while is, and again, I keep pointing out it's not Mint's fault, but being based on Ubuntu, they have a short support time for the non-LTS releases. It's only sort of 6 months or so, give and take, when they release it. Obviously, the Debian Edition gets around this. It's a much, much longer support cycle. So you've got all the goodness of Mint, but you've got an OS that's supported for much longer, years. Yeah. So, Mint, when?
That sounds like a great upgrade. Yeah, and also I really love the idea that they've put effort into having a Mint Debian edition. It sounds like,
yeah,
it's a good thing to do. It's not putting all your eggs in one basket, and it's also, it's the kind of thing that another distribution cannot do. You know, what is it basically saying what Mint is?
Yeah.
You know, Mint is the user experience, and we can have this on top of Ubuntu packages, or we can have this on top of Debian packages, and that's kind of unique.
But I think that's a very good point about the whole baskety egg situation as well. While Mint is fully dependent on Ubuntu, there's a potential single source of failure there. So if Canonical decides it's going to do something completely different,
like charge them for the binary packages,
exactly.
Hey, that's another new story.
there's all sorts of things that may happen, and Canonical has shifted its focus. But yeah, I think it's in Mint's long-term interest to be able to say, I mean, Ubuntu is based on Debian anyway, so if they say, well, we're just going to skip the middle man, Debian will be around for decades to come. Debian is awesome. The stable distro is a bit out of date for desktop usage, but so if they can become a shiny, modern, fresh front end to the testing version of Debian at least, then...
But they won't get meh.
No, that's true. If that will bother them, yeah.
Well, they get frankincense and gold. My Bible study's going a little bit there.
Oh, well, how were you raised, Graham?
I was raised as a little Ewok.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was only when I reached the age of 12 I realised that I was human.
If Wookiees live in Endor, you must acquit. So while we're mentioning Ubuntu and Canonical and Mint all in the same breath at this point, I should say that just back to my earlier discovery about Canonical buying an advert in Linux Voice, we are the editorial team who produced quite gloriously the fantastic cover issue, Has Ubuntu Lost It?
Yeah.
About a year ago.
I think that should demonstrate our editorial independence.
Yeah, it does. That shows our editorial independence, and it shows Canonical's, you know, hey, we don't care. Just you go off and be awesome.
Yeah.
We're like Bruce Schneier working at BT.
Well, I think Bruce worked for a security company that was bought by BT.
Oh, I see.
He was there for 7 years.
Yeah. So he knew it was owned by BT.
Yeah.
Somebody must have told him.
So that was our challenge, which I think we've quite successfully completed this episode. But it means we need a new challenge.
Young men always need a new challenge.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. How about
early to mid-30s men?
We need a new challenge.
What should the challenge be?
We don't have Bob Moss or Bruce Schneier to suggest anymore. So.
Well, we do have... I mean, the thing is, here we are with our high-backed leather armchairs, our frothing pints of ale supplied by the White Hart Inn in Calne.
That's the White Hart Inn in Calne?
Yes.
Where is it, sorry?
It's the White Hart Inn in Calne. It's very near the ancient Neolithic site of Avebury and Stonehenge and all of its associated monuments. It's not just the one place. It's like a whole... It's a landscape. It's fantastic. So, anyway, that is beside the point. What I was going to say is that here we are in the White Hart Inn in Calne, insert gratuitous plug. But there are only four brains here. Whereas out on the internet... On linuxvoice.com, there are many brains. There are many, many more brains than we could ever have.
I went on the internet once. It was scary.
In our tiny minds. So, what we want is for you, listeners, and future readers. So what we want is for you, listeners, with your many, many, many brains, about 7,000 brains at last count, is to suggest a fantastic challenge for us, a challenge with some depth and some nuance that we can turn into a fantastic four-page feature for Linux Voice, as well as talking about on the podcast. So
the challenge is, I'm reading in between the lines after what Andrew just said, the challenge is to do whatever you challenge us to do. That would be the challenge, because we never actually do it.
That's the challenge.
Yeah.
Well, I did use Linux Mint Debian Edition.
Well, obviously you did, but I mean, the challenge is we're passing out there. We're integrating. We're leveraging a social media strategy and
keep your hands off my data silo.
We're not isolating our data silos. Hey, dear.
That sounds good. Yeah. Yeah. So let us know.
Let us know what you want us to do, and we'll pick the one that is, well, not exactly the easiest, but
yeah.
we'll pick one that we think we can spin 3,000 words out of. And that we think other people will be interested in. That brings us to Voice of the Masses.
Yes.
We ask, because it's the end of the year, it's the end of 2013, another revolution, another 365 days, what was the biggest event / story / project / manifestation of free software worthy stuff in the last year? And we've had quite a few replies, quite a few answers, a bit of discussion on this, both good and bad. I don't know. Let's kick off with you, Graham, just because we haven't seen you in such a long time. Those 8 weeks have really dragged for me. We've missed you on this podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. I have missed being on the podcast. I didn't know if it would ever happen again, but you know, just to find you three in here, in the
chance.
Pub actually just around the corner from where I live, it's just incredible. Well, I suppose first, about 3 or 4 years ago, I started to feel slightly ambivalent about Linux and open source. I started to get interested in other things, and it wasn't because my feelings had changed necessarily towards what excited me about Linux, but other things had become more interesting. So I will say that I've never felt more excited and more engaged in Linux and free software than I do now. Things seem to have really changed. SteamOS is a big part of it, but I don't spend a lot of my time playing games. But the wider acceptance of Linux and free software not being a cancer, the general kind of upward thrust of the way that it's going. 2013 has been a great year for that. Of course, we're only 1% of the way in. There's so much more we can do. When it comes to actual specific events and projects, I think KDE, a desktop I love, is doing brilliantly. It's not been in the news because it's not done a terrible job in the last 4 years. It's been doing, you know, it's just new release. I mean, Qt 5.2 has just been released. That includes Android support, includes iOS support, although it's not 100%. You know, Qt is an open source API that allows you to develop for your Linux desktop, for Windows, for OS X, for iOS, for Android, for Windows 8, you know. And that's free software, GPL, LGPL licensed. It's brilliant.
If anybody doesn't know what Graham's talking about, it's sometimes called Qt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very difficult to pin a single event.
You mentioned Steam, first of all, probably because it's freshest in your mind, but the masses in their collective voice have also vocalised that. Duncan Murray says, surely the biggest news is Steam. It's probably the biggest news of the last 10 years for Linux. I hope they're doing it because, and this is a key point, I reckon. I hope they're doing it because it makes good business sense, not because of an ideological reason, even if I believe in that ideology. If it works, I think it'll bring all sorts of benefits to Linux. And that's, you know, I completely agree with him. I want it to be a hard-nosed business decision to use Linux.
Yeah.
Because then that means that it's here to stay.
That's the only reason why Google uses Linux.
Of course. Android.
Yeah.
Rather than some butchered version of Windows OS. Espada V8 says, I have to agree with Duncan. And again, when do you ever see that? This is a digression. When do you ever see that on the internet? When do you ever see people agreeing with each other in a civilised manner? If
fantastic stuff.
I saw it once on Slashdot.
Never.
Many years ago.
I have to agree with Duncan. SteamOS is huge news, and because it's done for business reasons, it should mean that it won't just fade away for 6 months. And we'll hopefully keep pushing Linux, in particular graphics card driver support, forward.
Yeah, especially with AMD. So I never mentioned the SteamOS, the official one, is only Intel only. It's Intel only, and it's only NVIDIA. No AMD, no ATI, old school graphics support, unless you fudge it. It's Debian, of course.
Corbin the Raven says Steam on Linux, SteamOS, Steambox, etc. Also Mint 15.16. And Brendan says, for me personally, it will be Football Manager 2014 running natively on Linux via a native Steam client and the continued growth of games titles for Linux on Steam.
So lots of love for Steam on the internet.
I've never thought that games were that big to actual Linux people. You know, I thought it was a bit of a chicken and an egg situation, and I've said that twice now, but...
But I guess with Steam, suddenly Linux users have got access to a much wider range of games than 5 years ago.
A lot of people dual-booted... Well, probably still because of that.
But none of us are mad PC gamers.
No.
No.
Zed's NES, but yeah. That's something different.
No, and in fact, the whole gaming, PC gaming thing, I find just extremely boring. Update your graphics cards, get the most frames per second when you frag people over the internet.
When you frag a 12-year-old boy who's cursing and calling your mother a prostitute on the internet.
It's dreadful. It's not fun at all. But the resurgence of independent games on Linux, of things like Thomas Was Alone and VVVVVV and
Hotline Miami,
just really inventive games that are not about the graphics hardware. They're about actually using your brain.
Yeah,
when the developers have just tried to do something different and be creative and be clever.
It's like I walked past Graham's window earlier today. He didn't know, but I was looking through his window and he was playing a 2D platformer where you just control the red block.
Oh yeah, jumping around. Thomas Was Alone. Yeah,
that was it. But you know, it's like so incredibly simple. And you think the 2D platforming genre has been done to death by now, because it's been the mainstay of video gaming for decades and decades. So, but it still looked a great game.
And I think, you know, if we're talking about gaming, you know, I think everybody's beginning to accept that those old classic ideas, they don't die out. In fact, it doesn't matter how flashy graphics or hardware gets, the playability is in those old games is just as vital today as it always has been,
and there's still room for adding new creative elements.
And so their new versions, they call it retro or they call it whatever they want to call it, but in fact it's a new game. It's just using old playability and it still works.
Well, I would say my person,
the guys in the pub don't agree, but
they're laughing over there. They're probably using some terrible other operating system.
They're just typing away in their Blackberries.
It's going to die. For me, the big event for 2013 was the whole NSA revelations and Edward Snowden. And I think that has had an impact on Linux indirectly. But some people, not most people, sadly, but some people are starting to ask, the software that I use, in the light of all these revelations, what am I using? Given that I'm using Microsoft software, I can't look at it. I can't look at the code. I don't know what it's doing underneath. And then there are the claims about Microsoft in the Prism program and giving data to the NSA. Now, none of us read the entire source code to our software before compiling it. To some extent, none of us can really know. But
I listen to mine.
You listen to yours on that website, yeah.
While you sleep.
Must have great effects on your psyche. But yeah, I trust Debian 99.99999999%, whereas I trust Microsoft much less. So, but you do see people, even non-technical people, talking about
this. I think
that's
a really good point.
I like the BBC news website, for instance. You look at the comments there, and I think it's fairly reflective of the mood and the opinion in the UK. And I've seen people saying, look, I want to move away from Microsoft because they're in prison. What do I do? And they have no idea about Linux, and they've probably heard of Apple, but you know, that doesn't help. But slowly, there's this sort of, well, why would you buy a black box device and piece of software in this day and age with everybody monitoring us?
I mean, it obviously makes sense at a personal level, but it also makes a huge amount of sense, you know, for our parliaments and things like that. I mean, obviously, you know, the extent of spying has obviously been shown to be quite wide.
And,
when you look at the number of hoops that charities have to go through to get their funding in terms of accessibility and just adhering to various standards and recruitment policies and things like that, it's absolutely absurd that governments are in control of these enormous budgets of our money, and they just don't have to give any regard to how they treat our data.
Yeah, and their own data.
And their own data. Although they sometimes treat their own data with a bit more respect than they do our data, which is odd. However, the internet, the Linux Voice portion of the internet, has also spoken on the Snowden revelations and Prism and all that lot. Unfortunately, when I copied and pasted this, I missed out the name of whoever said it.
Some guy.
And I haven't put my SIM card into my Nexus 5 yet, so I can't get on the internet here.
It's probably for his benefit or her benefit.
Yes. So, on the downside, the Snowden revelations, says, for now, Anonymous Penguin, Mr. Stallman has perhaps been proved to be more correct than some previously thought. The slightly more positive take on this is that, as a consequence of these stories, many more people now think and talk about the implications of using technology. Exactly what you've just said.
Yeah, yeah.
Open source and free Libre software now seem to be frequently cited as ways of regaining control over our digital lives. And who's that? E? All right, someone with the username of just the letter E, which is a bit unhelpful, says, in the world, the Snowden revelations in Linux, I don't know if coming at the end of the year, Valve support for Linux. So that's, you know, both of our big stories just now.
I was in this pub on my own with some other people at the bar just maybe a week ago, and they asked me what I did, and I said, well, actually, I'm unemployed, but I used to work for a Linux magazine. And these ordinary folks, they'd heard of Linux, and they associated it with, they said, oh, the communist thing.
Oh, no. Yeah, fantastic.
I said, well, you know, whereas I used to say, yeah, but open source is great and good and all this, because everybody, I'm sure, will be familiar with this conversation. But this time, I was able to say, well, yes, no, no, firstly, no to that. No. But in fact, this is what open source is, you know. The NSA, everybody is spying on us. With open source, you can be sure of what it is you're running on all of your technology.
It's also libertarian in a way. Yeah.
And that actually was something that they understood, and that happened. It was much easier to explain the advantages and benefits of open source and you know, head off those conversations, those political kind of ideals, much quicker and more effectively than it's always been when you say, well, actually, it creates a better product and there's better features and it's actually much more secure.
Well, where do you think these political associations come from? I mean, one thing that sticks with me is when Jim...
The Daily Mail?
Well, I think going back, Jim Altchin, a Microsoft guy in the early 2000s, when Steve Ballmer said that the GPL was a cancer, another big Microsoft guy said that open source is anti-American. You know, sharing things with your neighbour and stuff. Yeah, like that's completely against...
Ah, look, come on, you can't just take the word of two idiots and say, you know, an idiot with a soapbox is still an idiot. You can't.
Yeah, but people listen to these idiots.
Yeah, but they're idiots as well.
Four of them around a table in a pub and you've got them all.
If you tell a lie, tell a big lie. And if you tell it frequently enough, people will start to believe it.
All right, let's get on to two things from the comment section of thenextvoice.com that we haven't touched on before. Mark Johnson says, in positive terms, OggCamp was the big one for me. I would say that as I helped organise it, but I genuinely believe it was the best it's ever been this year.
I was there, and it was the first time I'd ever been to OggCamp, and genuinely my heartfelt feeling was I couldn't believe I hadn't gone before. There were such great people. It was just, I got on really well with everyone I met. I felt really at home. It was great conversation, great sessions, and yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful event.
Is that just because of your ancestral links?
To Liverpool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I try not to think about it, but perhaps, yeah, perhaps a little bit.
So Mark Johnson also does the Ubuntu UK podcast, so...
Hello, Mark.
Thanks for letting me on there on your bit of the internet about a month ago, whenever it was.
Must seem so long ago.
It's a very long time ago.
Yeah, for people not involved.
I like the Ubuntu podcast. I must, if you've not listened to it, give it a go. Obviously, it's not as good as this one, but yeah. Also, Connie has more instructive information for us. Without doubt, the biggest story in 2013 from the open source point of view is the closure of Groklaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how quickly we forget. Without Pamela Jones's fair, incisive, and destructive analysis of the big corporation patent troll, the open source community has lost a good soldier. The biggest, but hidden, battle is between Mir versus Wayland. The best story is the rise of the alternative desktop environments and the fact that now more people learn to code on Linux because of the Raspberry Pi than any other tool for Linux ever created. Thanks, Connie. You've packed an awful lot in there.
That was a great message, yeah.
So, Raspberry Pi, Pamela Jones, and Mir versus Wayland, which is a hidden battle. And I agree it's hidden, because its desktop stuff is dark and impenetrable and cloudy, and well, no one really understands it.
Rendering engines and, graphical layers.
But certainly, we can all understand Groklaw, and that was... that was Pamela's genius, because legal niceties and patent trolls and court cases are extremely convoluted and complicated, especially the stuff when it started, like the SCO case. Yeah. SCO, was it SCO versus Novell?
SCO versus originally? IBM, yeah. But originally, that, $1 billion.
When did that start? That must have been 10 years ago.
2003, at least, or 4, yeah.
And as companies merged into other companies and companies bought other companies, that just, the water's muddied so many times.
Well, you can still buy this SCO Unixware and SCO Open Server from some...
I think it must have been 2001 or 2002, I was just thinking.
Maybe.
It was a long time ago.
But despite how muddied the waters got, Pamela Jones, Groklaw, was always there, just explaining things in ways that, idiots like us can understand.
And I was respected that she was genuinely doing it out of love for free software in the community, because she wanted she never gave, as far as I know, nobody's ever seen a picture of her, she never gave any interviews outside. She was really just, I'm a woman, a paralegal, a lawyer, whatever, just doing this because I care about it. And so,
And tying it in, to the other comments that have been made as to why Groklaw closed down, it was because she didn't want to put her sources at any risk by knowing that there was a security flaw in the email system she was using that were being monitored.
Maybe she was using LavaBit.
In terms of democracy, democracy has suffered as a result already of the NSA spying and our government spying.
It's pretty terrible.
I'd like to get her in for an interview, I think.
I was wondering if she'd want to write a column.
Yes, even better.
That would be good, if you're listening, Pamela.
And if you could say that close to the microphone, that would be even better than that.
I was wondering if she'd want to write a column.
Good skills, Ben. What about Connie's other point here? The fact that there are now more people learning to code on Linux because of the Raspberry Pi.
2 million Raspberry Pis.
$2 million.
And I think it's more than the Raspberry Pi itself. The Raspberry Pi was just the right device at the right time. It's come as a whole swell of movement. On the education side, to actually... wanting kids to learn to code rather than to type documents.
If you get to, if you've ever read Leo Tolstoy's magnificent War and Peace, the last 200 words of that is a meditation on leadership and power and the great man of history theory. And he puts forward the opinion that a great leader such as Napoleon doesn't create the force behind him. He's... a force creates its leader.
Yeah.
So the swell of malcontentment from the French sans-culottes, the peasantry, they thrust a figurehead forward like flotsam borne before a wave or breaking on a beach. And that's the Raspberry Pi Foundation right there. They haven't created all of these millions of people that want to buy a Raspberry Pi now. They have been brought up organically because of there are so many people that want to learn, that want to hack and find out about stuff.
So what does that make Aben Upton then? Who is he in history?
Well, he's got an awesome tash, so I would say Stalin. But
Aben Upton is Stalin. You heard it first on the Linux Voice podcast. Yeah, he's going to do a purge soon.
I've always felt really bad for the people like the BeagleBone, because they were creating awesome hardware before the Raspberry Pi. Yeah. The BeagleBone Black is arguably better for a lot of Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it's better spec, isn't it?
Yeah, and for GPIO. But it just never, for whatever reason, they never told the story right. It never sort of...
That's, But that's different aims, different philosophies, very, very slightly different angles that you come at things.
But in some ways, you know, Andrew's story is of a head of steam building, you know, and it happened to be the Raspberry Pi, and they did everything right, but, you know, it's standing on the shoulder of giants again.
Yeah, it was like two surfers just outside. The BeagleBone just missed the wave, but Raspberry Pi caught it.
Yeah, but, you know, great truths in the world, such as relativity or whatever it happens to be, they will be discovered eventually. The right thing will happen.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes a certain person to push it over that.
The weird thing is that if War and Peace had been written right now, it would be so much shorter, because he wouldn't need that final 200 pages. He would have just said, Google Raspberry Pi. So I guess all that remains is to wrap this podcast up. It's been a lovely year. I hope everybody has a great Christmas, and Ben and Mike and I will really enjoy working on Linux Voice and bringing it to fruition as the best Linux magazine out there in the world today.
It's going to be awesome.
You guys have done an incredible job.
Thanks.
It's quite a lot of work for us three, though.
It is. If we knew somebody else who knew about Linux and also knew how to write decent English and had an idea about running a magazine and who could join us and help share the load, that would be fantastic.
Indeed. But I can't be bothered to travel far. They'd have to be quite close.
Yeah.
I am unemployed.
You know. Graham, of course. Ah. Brilliant idea.
Really?
Would you like to
consider it?
Would you like to join us, Graham?
I would love to join you. It would give me no greater pleasure.
The salary is a lump of coal and a carrot. So thanks, Graham Morrison, newly unveiled exclusively here as the latest member of the Linux Voice team.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris, thanks. So brilliant. We now have... the fellowship is now complete.
We just need to deliver the ring.
We do. We just need to deliver the ring to the printers on time to get on the shelves. And and that's all the weather. So have a good Christmas, everybody. And we'll see you in the new year. Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.
Bye. It's such a nice day.